Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 87. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Allie Williams from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Allie is a vocal coach, and she has SMA Type 2. Allie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is super exciting. It's the first podcast I've ever been on.
That's great. That's great. I know you do, you know, a lot of videos and stuff, and we recently gave you the Monday shout out on SMA News Today. So really excited to have this conversation. But before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Awesome. Well, Allie, to get started, I know we did a bunch of pre-recording talk, mostly about nerd stuff, which I'm excited to get into. But if you can just tell listeners a little bit about yourself, and just, you know, when you were diagnosed with SMA, a little bit about your background.
So I grew up in Pryor, Oklahoma. And the reason why I grew up in Pryor is because at 18 months old, I was diagnosed with SMA type 2. Back then, it was called Wernicke-Hoffmann disease because I am 40 years old and they didn't really know much about SMA back then. So they told my parents that they should take me somewhere, get me comfortable, and that I wasn't going to live very long. So my grandmother, my father's mother, convinced my parents to move to Pryor, helped them get a really nice place that was accessible for me, that was going to be perfect for me to, quote, live the end of my life. And so that's where I grew up. And why we moved where we were. My dad traveled a lot for his job, and I was diagnosed in Arizona, and I had actually gotten really sick from my whooping cough shot. And my mom had been saying since the beginning, there's something wrong, and no one was listening to her. She said she feels different than my sister, who is a year and a half older than me. She said, something's wrong. I don't know what it is. And everybody kept saying, she's fine, she's fine. But I wasn't reaching any of my milestones. I wasn't crawling. I wasn't pulling up on things. I still rolled over and did all the normal baby things. But when I got my whooping cough shot, I got really sick and was in the hospital. And one of the doctors says, hey, I just did a stent on this. I know what this is. And so they did all of the testing that they needed to do to diagnose me with Wernicke-Hoffmann disease. I later got a diagnosis of SMA type 2 when I was a little bit older, when I surpassed the she will be dead by 6 years old.
Right, right. And yeah, I mean, I know for a lot of us, that was kind of the narrative, whatever age they stamped up on you. And thinking about too, when you were growing up, you know, obviously now you're a big disability advocate and everything, but when you were growing up, were you conscious about having a disability? Like, was it something you thought about, or was it something that you thought about more later on in life?
I don't think I ever thought of myself as different, just because everyone that my family surrounded us with treated me exactly the same as my siblings. My parents treated me exactly the same as my siblings. My friends treated me just like each other did. I was teased a little growing up, but I think everybody was teased growing up. I don't think that that's just to people with disabilities. I feel like everybody was teased when they were kids about, you know, this or that. Mine just happened to be about my wheelchair. I never really felt different. I never really felt different until I would say probably college, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The first time I went through college, I got a art degree from Roger State University in Claremore, Oklahoma, when I was 20 years old. So I think that was when I felt the most different, just because I couldn't do what I wanted to do, which was music.
Definitely. And I absolutely, that leads me to my next question is, can you talk a little bit about, I know music is your one of your primary passions, and you've had a really interesting journey there in terms of what you're doing now. Can you talk about that? So first off, you know, thinking back to that first college experience, what was it you wanted to do? What were kind of the barriers there?
So I actually got my, I got a full ride to Oklahoma State University in 1999 for music. And I was really excited about going. I wanted to go. There was nothing holding me back except for my own fear. My mother was supportive. She said, if that's what you want to do, please go. But I had never lived without my mother. And my mother was my main caregiver. Nobody else had ever taken care of me before. So I was thinking, I'm going to go off to college, do new things that I didn't know, have somebody that I don't know taking care of me. It scared me to death. So I made the conscious decision to go to Roger State, which used to be a 2-year, it's now a 4-year. So I got my associate's degree, and then I was going to, after that, move on to get my music degree at OSU. So I went to Roger State University and didn't do the music thing yet. And then I met a boy and I moved away and I got divorced and came back and decided to go back to school at 35 years old to get my music degree. And I graduated in December 2020.
That's awesome. And I mean, hey, like it's never too late. And that's a really, you know, that's a perseverance. But I know obviously, you know, at 35, you'd been through a lot more than when you were 20. But what were some of those things that made you feel ready at that time to say, okay, I think I'm ready to now to go really pursue what I want to do in life?
Well, at that point, I'd have had several people, my friends, people that I was dating take care of me. I've had other people take care of me. So living away from my family really wasn't a scary thing anymore. So living in Stillwater, which is 2 hours away from where my mom and dad live, you know, that wasn't scary for me. I am at that point had been adult enough to hire and fire my own people to take care of me. I knew how to do the word is not manipulation. I knew how to use the correct resources for myself to get what I need to live alone. I'm just bolder as an older person, not as scared of everything. And it's not really not being scared. It's feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And that is one of my favorite quotes. I have no idea who said it, but I heard it once and I've used that my whole adult life now is feeling the fear and doing it anyway.
That is a great quote. I'm sure Google can tell us at some point, you know, like where that originated from. But that's great. And well, and backtracking for a sec too about you with your music career. So you know, like because it's so broad, like what were the kinds of music you were really into growing up, and like what would like did you want to be a singer? What were the kind of your aspirations then, and how has it evolved?
Okay, so the weird part is my mother forced me into music. Forced me. My sister had played the clarinet for 6 months at school, and my aunt had given my sister that clarinet. And so my sister didn't enjoy it. And my mother said, "You're playing this." And so I just started playing it in the sixth grade band, and I actually enjoyed playing music. At that point, my hands were working really well, and I think that's the reason why my lungs are so strong is because my mother forced me to play a wind instrument, because your lungs are like one of the first things to go with SMA. And I think that that's what kept my lung capacity big and strong growing up. My junior year in high school, my right hand stopped working, so I could no longer play my clarinet. So I switched from band to choir. And I was like, whoa, singing is so much better than playing an instrument. I can be so much more expressive with my feelings. And the kind of music I enjoyed in high school was rock, but like emo rock. Emo wasn't a thing yet, but like I was goth. I didn't like any colors. I didn't like pink. Pink was the worst color. So I was like, you know, angsty teenager goth for sure. So like that's the kind of music I liked, but I liked singing languages in choir. Like that was a big thing. I liked singing in different languages. I felt like I understood more culture that way. I felt just more in tune with my soul when I got to sing other than just in English.
That's really interesting.
And then when I was in college getting my art degree, my brother, who is 7 years younger than me, called me and said, "Can you come help my choir learn this music?" So I only lived a block away from the junior high. So I tootled myself over there and I took the bass section of the eighth grade class. And I taught the boys I basically did a section lead with seventh and eighth grade boys. I think it was seventh and eighth grade boys. And I was, 19 at the time. And then the choir teacher, who was young and pregnant, had to go to a doctor's appointment and they didn't have any substitutes. So my brother gave her my number and she called me and I subbed for choir for 80 students.
Wow.
And that is when I knew that that's when I wanted like a full-on career as music. Like I wanted to go to school to get my music degree, but I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I didn't know if I wanted to teach, if I wanted to go to Broadway. Everybody wants to go to Broadway, right? I wasn't sure. I knew it was music and I didn't know what, but like substituting for choir, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to teach.
That's so cool. I just love that in both those cases, first of all, you're like exposure to it. And then that incident both spawned on by family members. And it's just kind of ironic because usually the story is more like, classic cliche one is like the parents want you to be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, but it's like your family forced music on you and that became your art and your passion. So I love that. But that's really cool. And so thinking back to that first experience when you're subbing and you're teaching, like, was it something about the atmosphere? Was it just something that clicked that made it that like sparked an idea to teach specifically?
I think it was when one of the students said to me, "This is the most fun I've had in choir ever." Just, it killed me. Any other aspect that I had in me other than just pursuing music was just, I needed to do this. I was just like, oh, this, like, it's like my soul just went, oh, that's what we were meant to do.
That's fantastic. I love it. And then actually, before we get into the rec, because I do want to continue this conversation, but if everyone could please listen to one more brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so on that note, you discover that's what you want to do and you kind of found your niche. And then, as you said, the next few years of your life play out. But now circling back to when you're 35 and you decide to, okay, let's go for it. Now, what is that process like of applying to school, laying out plans, all of that?
It actually happened really quick. I went, what am I going to do with my life? Huh. I wanted to get my music degree. Let's go do that. So literally happened in an afternoon. I made the decision. I called the school. I set up an interview. They said to have two songs ready. 2 weeks later, I went to Oklahoma State University with some friends who took me. I sang for them and they accepted me. This happened so quick. And I had no idea what I was getting into. The music program at Oklahoma State University Greenwood School of Music is so, so hard. So hard. And I hadn't been at school for 15 years because I graduated when I was 20 with an associate's from a 2-year college. So it's not like it was really competitive or anything, but the music program at OSU is hardcore, hardcore hard. And I had no idea what I was getting into. They actually, I showed up with bright blue hair, piercings in my face, tattoos all over. And I said, what's the worst they can do is tell me no. I did not think that they would actually accept a 35-year-old woman with tattoos, piercings, and crazy hair. I really didn't. But I wouldn't know if I didn't try. So again, felt the fear, did it anyway. It was fast, and then like, oh gosh, I did that in October, and then I started online school in January
Okay.
and took just a few classes because I needed to see if I could like actually do school, because again, was
Yeah.
scared. So I took a couple online music classes and a couple of the gen eds that I still needed that I didn't get from my associate's degree. And then started on campus the following August.
That's great. That's great. And what was that experience in terms of, accessibility and managing campus life? Once you got there on the campus, what was kind of all that whole journey?
That's a very, very long, long story.
Okay.
So the building that the music program used to be in, they have a new building now that they're moving in August. Was a very old building. None of it was accessible. Zero. None of it. The elevator for me to get onto the stage was a service elevator that said, not for human transportation.
Yeah, I've been on those. Yeah.
It broke my chair twice. The elevator that takes you from the basement, which is where all the practice rooms are, and the only bathroom I could use on campus was in the basement, was not big enough for my chair. The half of the classes were upstairs where there was no elevator access to. So they had to move those classes to other classrooms. The choir room had stairs in it to go down to where I was supposed to be in. So I sat in the back of the class by myself. Most of the places we sang at were not wheelchair accessible. So once again, found myself singing alone, away from my peers. So it was a nightmare. I absolutely do not regret doing any of it. And I do have an open ADA complaint with the school. I can't really talk about it. I don't think my lawyer
Sure.
wants
Yeah,
me
yeah, yeah.
to.
Right.
The teachers were wonderful.
Okay.
They accommodated me as best as they can
Yeah.
with that crappy building. And
So
it was the crappiest of crappy buildings. There was asbestos that they had tried to clear out 4 or 5 times during my time there. So yeah, it was pretty bad. It was bad. It was really bad. But again, the staff and the music department, I'm going to preface this by absolutely saying the school really didn't do what they needed to do for me, but the music program accommodated me as the best they could with all of the crap that we had to deal with. So it was really, really great doing what I wanted to do, but it was hard and it was frustrating, and I hated that I had to fight so hard just to get what I needed from the school itself.
And well, first of all, so those elevators, I think I know you're the ones you're talking about that like you can actually hear them rattle as like you're going up on it. It's like it feels like you're on a rundown a ride at a theme park. I mean, they like what? No, a quick story I have on one of those. There was a bowling alley I loved going to in college, and but it had one of those. And one time I got stuck on it, and thankfully though, like I mean, there's soup. It's a super small distance, so it's not like But thankfully they got it working. And on the way out, they gave my friends and I like 10 free passes for the I was like, hey, I'll get stuck again. If as long as it doesn't like, you know, risk my life or anything, I'm good to do that again if it gets me freebies. But but thinking about that though, like, you know, and I mean, you know, you mentioned the, you know, resilience of the department, but on like some of those hardest days you had when you were just dealing with, you know, on the top of, you know, the regular pressures of being a student, but you're having to deal with all this inaccessibility mumbo jumbo, and, you know, what got you through it? Like, what was the thing that kept you going?
My vocal coach. I went into her office and she would let me sob to her, just cry until I couldn't breathe on just how frustrating it is to have to do all of this stuff, not only as a 35-year-old woman, because my memory is not as good as it used to be, but as a disabled student. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to get good grades. And, you know, I was never satisfied with a C. That's not a good grade to me. So not just that either. Like, everything was it just piled up. And what kept me through is being able to go to April Golliver's office and just yell and say, I'm frustrated. This is bull crap. I don't know if I can do this anymore. And there were several times that I was so close to quitting. And she was like, no, you're not allowed to quit. Absolutely not. You're not. You give the whole entire studio hope that if you can do this, so can they. Because again, the music department is hard. I mean, the whole, they have high expectations of their students. They want you to have good grades. They push you hard. The curriculum is hard. It's hard. And I didn't know how insufficient in music I was until I went to school. Like, there's so much stuff that I can do with music now. But when I joined, I thought I could read music. I had no idea that there's actually like more than just seeing the notes on the staff. Like, it's, yeah. So I would say that my vocal coach is the reason why I made it through. Also, the music advisor, she also listened to me cry a few times and gave me a few resources for me to reach out to not complain to, but tell my issues that I'm having. And I would say the disability department helped me a little with some of the frustrations that I was having. But again, there was only so much they could do because of the crappy building. And it's really had everything to do with that crappy building. The building was crappy and everybody knows it was crappy. Like, everybody talked about how crappy that building was. So it was just a crappy building.
I went to college where it was a very mix of, like, I mean, it was, you know, an old university, so there were definitely buildings like that. Fortunately, the one I was in was much more modern because I was in the humanities department, which was relatively new in comparison with the history of the university. If I had been, you know, like another major and in one of those, it would have been the same hassle. And so, but Allie, thinking too, I mean, I love her. I love that story. And I'm so glad that, you know, your vocal teacher pushed you through and helped motivate you. But thinking too, just about the larger spectrum of music and art, why do you think, in your words, disability representation is so important in that field?
So I've just noticed, just from my little bit of TikTok fame, I say that it's, I'm not famous by any means. I have a small following on TikTok. The amount of children with SMA that have seen my videos and seen me sing and have seen that, and their parents telling me, I don't think you understand, some seeing someone like themselves sing and be like you, it is important. I didn't have that growing up. There was nobody on TV even close to, you know, music or art or anything that was disabled at all. Like, not with a physical disability in a wheelchair. So I didn't have that to look up to. And I think that I would have gone to college the first time if I would have had somebody to look up to and say, oh, if they can do it, I can do it. Let's go. You know what I mean? I think that's why it's important. I know it's important because I've been told that it's important.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I know it is because so many little girls' moms have reached out and said, my daughter loves you. She loves hearing you sing and watch you because, mommy, look, she's in a wheelchair like me. That is so heartwarming and just absolutely amazing to me. And I mean, with Ally Stroker on Broadway, that gave me even more hope of, oh my gosh, maybe we'll get even more people in the arts and in the programs and in music and in movies, because Ally also did a movie on Hallmark.
Yeah, I saw it.
It didn't even talk about her disability. It wasn't brought up one freaking time. It was just a movie with a girl in a wheelchair. It didn't have to do with anything about her being in a wheelchair at all. Like, that wasn't the story. She just happened to be in a wheelchair. So that, I thought that was huge and such a win for our community.
Absolutely. I mean, she is a phenomenal advocate. And no, I love that. I love that. That, yeah, it's the power of seeing someone who looks like you does wonders. So that's great. And Ally, shifting gears. So you've also been on Evrisdy for a while. Can you talk about that process and, you know, any kind of changes you've experienced since being on the treatment?
So I tried to get on Spinraza, and unfortunately here in Oklahoma, they don't do it here. I think there might be two or three people who do Spinraza, but my doctor just said, basically, this other medication is coming down the road. You know, by the time that's out, we may have gotten you approved and may have get you there. I think it would just be better if we wait for the oral medication. Because of my age, I have a Harrington rod, so the doctor was just not convinced that they were going to be able to give it to me anyway. So we waited, and I was waiting for the approval because I knew it was coming in August. I knew that the date was August 24th. And then they approved it on like August 17th, I think.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was August 17th. And I went, oh, it's early. I called my doctor immediately. I said, what blood test do you need? What test do you need? What do I need to do? What do I need to fill out? And again, this is during COVID. So we had to do everything telemedicine, I think. Right. Yeah. So the nurse there, she was like, Ally, relax. We're working on it. We'll get you there. And I went, okay. And she said, call me back in 2 weeks if I haven't called you. So 2 weeks later I called and I said, let's go. And she said, sent in all of the paperwork. We've already got a denial from your insurance. We're sending in the rebuttal, I guess, to the insurance denial. Uh-huh. And then I had to wait another 2 weeks for all of those paperwork and everything to go through. And I took my first dose on September 11th. So it happened really quick. I was expecting it to be like 6 months of approval and fighting and everything. But like, it was like 4 weeks from when it came out to when I got it. Like, because I was on it. I called and the nurse was like, Ally, give me a chance. But again, my doctor was very aware that it was coming through and that was an option that I wanted to take. So getting it was pretty easy, but I'm on Medicare, Medicaid. So having two insurances is an easier process, in my opinion, because if one says yes, the other's going to say yes.
Yeah.
So that was pretty easy. My experience with it has been phenomenal. I want to say miracle, because I was not expecting any kind of gain at all. I was expecting, you know, just to stay the same. And at that point, I couldn't lift my hands off my lap. At that point, I couldn't really swallow food. At that point, my voice was really weak. I couldn't put makeup on because I couldn't get my hands to stay up. My caregiver was having to feed me and brush my teeth for me. And that was all new within COVID time. Like that had started happening. And I don't know if it was, you know, just due to being in the house and not being active, or I have no idea. I just know that I had started losing all those abilities. And I am now doing things. I think I've been on it 9 months. Yeah, 9 months I've been on the medication. I'm now doing things that I haven't done since my 20s. So I can lift my arms from my lap up to my chest on both hands. I can open and close both my hands. My right hand had been just tight in a ball where I couldn't even open my fingers. They barely move, but I can move them. I can feed myself again. I can swallow. I don't have the... Oh, this is going to sound bad. I don't have the need for my cough assist anymore. I should probably still use it on a daily basis, but I don't.
Hey, it's hard to hold the discipline. I mean, I try to do it a few times a week, but we all do slack. It's okay.
But at that point, though, before the med, I had to use my cough assist every day.
Yeah.
I couldn't get any of the phlegm that I would just chill out on my vocal cords all day long. It was affecting singing for my school, the whole thing. So. I've noticed deeper breaths. I can sing longer. Oh my gosh, that's like one of the best parts. That and being able to put my makeup on again has been, because I am colorful. Even though I hated black when I was a kid, I only wear colorful makeup now. So I look like I'm straight out of the 80s, and that's perfectly okay with me. But like, I love that I'm able to do these things for myself. My caregiver no longer has to do these things for me. So I don't want to say I don't feel guilty about it, but like, I don't have to feel that, do they really want to do my makeup today because I want to look pretty?
Uh-huh.
Because it's not guilt. It is, but it's not all at the same time. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's those things that you just want to be able to do independently, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, that's great that it has worked so well for you. And I just want to ask too, because like Spinraza, I mean, RISD and Spinraza work very differently from person to person. And so like, I've heard stories like yours, and then for others who have, you know, really struggled to see any gain, like what would you say to someone who maybe either they've been on a treatment for a little while and aren't really seeing anything, or they're hesitant about it starting? What would you say in terms of expectation management and all of those things?
I think that you should always expect the least, but hope for the most. So my expectation was, I'm not getting anything other than maintaining out of this medication. I will not get anything out of it. I feel like the hope is that the longer you're on it, maybe the more things you'll see. I have a friend who she started around the same time as me. And so she's been on it almost 9 months, and she's just now feeling things, noticing things. Her family's noticing. They're little. They're the tiniest, minute things. But maintaining is not getting worse. And that's what we do. We get worse. And not having to get worse anymore, I think, is enough. It would be for me. I keep saying that. I know I'm one of the lucky ones. I know that I've gotten so much out of this medication. And I feel like a lot of people just won't really believe me when I say that I would be just as excited about this medication if I was maintaining, completely and utterly maintaining. I think that maintenance is the expectation. If you get more than that, that's fantastic. And hopeful is always good, because I think they said in the trials that you won't really see anything until 2 years.
Wow.
So you don't know until your 2-year mark of taking it. You don't know. So unless you are very sick, which not every medication works for every single person. If you are not affected negatively by it, you should wait and give it time. Give it time to do its job. And again, maintaining is the expectation, and that's what everyone should keep in mind, don't get your hopes up, but don't lose hope either.
I think that's great. That's very well said. And Allie, well, this has been great. Just wrapping up here. So, you know, now you've graduated and you're entering the, we were talking before recording that you're in the process of starting a new job and soon. And so can you talk a little bit, obviously you haven't started the job yet, but with that in mind, can you talk a little bit just about your daily life and what things kind of look for you now that you've graduated, you're entering this next phase of your life?
Well, I am teaching voice lessons on as myself, not as like a job. So I'm self-employed at the moment. And I basically get up every day like normal, do my makeup, get ready for the day. But my morning is usually putting voice lesson plans for the week together, depending on what day that student has a voice lesson on. I teach on Monday, Wednesdays, Thursdays. I had a Friday, but she had to cancel voice lessons, unfortunately. But I do, like, in the morning of that person's lesson, I do their lesson plan for the day so I don't get distracted and nerdy talk because I love to talk. It's one of my favorite things to do. So it helps me keep on track. I play some video games during the day. I play World of Warcraft and League of Legends, so a little bit of a time waster there, but I do that.
Not at all a time waster. That's yeah.
And then I do some TikToking. I try to do my best to put out a positive message on the internet, and I am not a perfect person, so that doesn't always happen. I have my boohoo wah days, you know, I just kind of chill, hang out at the house. I don't really go out very much. COVID is still slightly scary for me. When I do leave the house, I wear a mask and everything. But the Delta variant is very prominent in my state, unfortunately. We only have 30% vaccination at the moment. So I'm staying home, hanging out, you know. But mostly it's preparing for my new job that I'm not allowed to talk about. So...
Well, hey, I wish you the best with it. I'm sure. But yes, any nerd stuff during the day, never a waste of time. So like, I have to ask too, a really important question. So like Wonder Woman's your favorite DC character. Do you have a favorite either like if it's a movie or a comic storyline, anything like any favorite Wonder Woman story?
Okay. So I know this is, I don't know how many people are going to think I'm absolutely nerdy for thinking this, but the new Wonder Woman, like the first one was great, but like the 1984, phenomenal. I love Kristen Wiig, number one. Oh my God, she's so good as a bad guy. So good. Okay, so
I am so glad. Great. No, I've been like laughed at so much for liking it, and I'm like, thankfully, I found someone else who enjoyed it too. I for me, it was like the hopeful movie I needed at the end of 2020 after a disaster. Like, I watched it on Christmas Day. I had a great time. You know, I mean, it's not without its flaws, but as like in terms of capturing the tone and the essence of the character and just like making it something very different from the first movie, I had a great time. So,
They not remember how absolutely awfully campy the original Wonder Woman series was?
Right.
And I felt like it captured so much of that, and it just felt good. It was wonderfully made. I think it's great. I love Gal Gadot. I love Kristen Wiig. I mean, you cannot go wrong with them as a duo. It was so good.
I'm with you there. I love it. So that's great. Well, and again, we can talk nerdy stuff all day, but wrapping up here though, Allie, so one question I always ask my guests is like, and a lot of it you've kind of already answered with some great quotes there, but do you have any advice though for any other people in the SMA community, especially this episode is going out in during SMA Awareness Month in August. And so is there anything you want to say, be it like to any age group, or maybe it's to a parent, just anyone in the SMA community, what do you want to say?
Well, I'm going to make it about music. I was told my whole life I shouldn't choose music because my lungs were going to give out, that I shouldn't do it, and that I shouldn't do it, and that I shouldn't do it. It doesn't matter what lungs you have. It doesn't matter what voice you have. Music is a really good way to express yourself, and that you should always have music in your heart. And if you want to sing, sing. Who cares if you can match pitch? Who cares? You don't have to do something well to enjoy it. If you want to do it, do it. Do not let fear stop you. Feel the fear and do it anyway.
That's fantastic. Well, we could not end it on a better note. So I love that. Thank you so much. And before we close out, where can people find you?
They can find me on TikTok under AlliewHeelz, or Instagram AlliewH33LZ81.
Awesome. We will put those links in the description for sure. But Allie, thank you again so much. This has been great. Thank you so much for sharing your story and everything you've had to say to the community. So thank you so much. And we'll continue our nerd conversation after.
So, awesome.
But for our listeners out there, you can find more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. We're all over Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast from. And you can check out all of our content on smanewstoday.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you all next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.